The following is a special presentation from WCHL News, winner of the Edward R. Murrow Award for Excellence in Journalism.
The presenting sponsor of today's forum is the Town of Chapel Hill's Economic Development Office, which works to attract and retain businesses and jobs in locations convenient to transit and housing, all in an effort to build a sustainable economy in which to live, work, and play. Businesses that have recently opened or expanded in Chapel Hill include DSI Comedy, Google, Kiona, Petco, and Youth Digital, bringing an additional 100 jobs to Chapel Hill. Chapel Hill is open for business, open to business, every day of the year. Economic development in Chapel Hill, right on the edge of the triangle.
It's the 2015 WCHL Community Forum presented by the Town of Chapel Hill Economic Development. Dozens of local leaders have spent the day debating the big issues affecting our community and you. This hour we discuss K-12 education, and it begins now.
Well, there may be no more important institution in our community than our schools. We've got some great ones right here in Orange County. But with so many pressures, what should we be doing to keep them that way? I'm D.G. Martin, your moderator for this hour, and joining me are several distinguished panelists. First of all, Parents for Educational Freedom in North Carolina, Daryl Allison, Chapel Hill Carrboro Board of Education member, James Barrett, Orange County Board of Education member, Steve Halicotis, we hope will be joining us, and East Chapel Hill Counselor, Kristen Heemstra, our friend also from great radio
The Art of Potential,
WCHL.
Yes.
And we're going to be joined in a few minutes. I hope that our state representative, Greg Meyer, is listening on the radio as he rushes back from Raleigh, where he is serving our community. Now, if you'd like to join the conversation, you can submit questions via Twitter using the hashtag #WCHLForum. If I said that like I knew what I was talking about.
Yeah, and you did a good job. No one will know that you don't.
Good job. Here's, we've got so many great issues and great concerns and we've got wonderful people who are helping us. And Craig Meyer didn't hear us on the radio. He sped back from Raleigh. Craig,
I
welcome.
Promise I abided by all of the state's laws on my return trip from the General Assembly to Chapel Hill.
We're not going to discuss that any further. What I'd love to do is to sort of go around the table to have each of our guests and panelists talk about the matters that are before them right now. And if it's all right, James Barrett, I'd like to talk to you first. You're on the Chapel Hill Carrboro School Board, and you guys have a lot of wonderful challenges and problems to deal with in the context of providing our kids some of the finest schools in the world. What's worrying you today?
Thanks, DG. The two big things that I think we're looking at right now is in the areas of pay, and specifically we have a proposal that we're working through to do some differentiated pay for teachers that allows teachers who really want to invest in their own growth to get ahead with a higher salary. That will be an ongoing discussion that we're having over the course of the next several months. And then the other thing that I think CHL has done a great job of covering is a bond for our older schools that are in great need of maintenance and renovations and even some capacity adding where appropriate. So those are the two big things that we have going on right now.
Thanks. Dale Allison, you bring a different perspective to the table. Tell us a little bit about the Parents for Educational Freedom, the special concerns, and how you see education in Orange County and Chapel Hill Carrboro today.
Thanks so much, DJ.
Thank you for coming.
Pleasure to be here. And, you know, listen, when we talk about education, K-12 education, I think it's very important that we all understand, and our organization understands this, that we have to have fine, strong, traditional public schools. We have to make sure that we have the funding, facility, pay teachers well, et cetera. And we want to make sure that that our children are truly thriving in that setting. And I think for the most part in North Carolina, I'm a product of K-12, my daughter's in public school, we're doing a pretty good job. But the critical point, our organization Parents for Education and Freedom in North Carolina, we believe in the support of all good schools, whether it be traditional public school, but we also see that, you know, public charter schools have a place to play in that space, as well as non-public schools, particularly for disadvantaged children. And so for us, I think what we have to really think about, and I challenge our leaders from this standpoint, that we have to get away from the majority and the percentages. Because I think, you know, from North Carolina standpoint, majority of our kids, vast majority of our kids are doing well. They will do well. My children will do well. The children around this table will do well. But we have to start looking at the percentages. The 30%, the 40% disadvantaged, economically disadvantaged children. And when you look at their success rate, it's not faring too well. And the key question is, what are we going to do about it? We can debate it, we can march, we can talk about more funding, but is that really reaching the classroom to where that child, too, despite their income and despite where they live, will also get that constitutional right for good quality education? We believe that you need all options on the table to in order to be able to reach every single child in the state.
Well, we'll hear some more about that as we continue. Thanks a lot, Daryl Allison, for the opening statement. Craig, you've rushed back from Raleigh. I think all of us who've watched you have been impressed with the way that you've jumped in to a quickly to a leadership role, but in the minority party in Raleigh, you serve in the House of Representatives. And as someone who's got a wonderful background in public education, working at the level of trying to help people who might need help the most, how is your experience translating into a service in Raleigh? And we're going to have a lot of time to explore that question. You can introduce us to that now.
Sure. Well, thank you, DG. I really appreciate the kind words. I'm just trying to be as good of a legislator as Greer is. That's my goal.
Watch out, you'll make me cry. Well, I'd just say, since you brought it up, that he's so happy to have you as a colleague and views you as a firm ally and a good friend.
Well, that's nice to hear also. Thank you. So, you know, my initial reaction to that question, TG, is that I spent 16 years working in public schools. Well, I spent 16 years working in Chapel Hill schools. I've worked in public schools for longer than that. And it's a shift to go from the practitioner level to the policymaker level. I have lots of beliefs and experience about what it takes to make an individual school or a school system help all children. But some of those things that I've experienced and believe in are very difficult to turn into a policy that you write into the state statute. And so even if I believe that every teacher should do this activity, whatever it is, I don't want to be the legislator that tells every teacher that they have to do that, because when I worked in the schools, I hated it when the legislature told us that everybody had to do this. So I'm trying to figure out what are the best levers that I can move. And the one that I am probably the most focused on is, we need a pipeline, we need a way to develop the best talent for our educational leadership, for principals and for teachers in the classroom. The best school districts have the best leaders and the best teachers. North Carolina hasn't done very well over the last few years of making sure that we are supporting young people who want to become teachers or teachers who want to move into administration. So how can we move the levers on that?
Right. Great. Well, another person who's got lots of experience online in the public schools is Christian Hemstra. We're especially happy to have you as a member of the WCHL family to come and represent your colleagues in the public schools.
Well, thank you.
And the students.
Yes, you know, I actually have so many ties, so I'm just going to give you a little bit of background. I went to Chapel Hill, Carrboro City Schools. I went to Phillips. I went to Chapel Hill High with James. You know, he didn't mention that, but, you know, he was there.
Well, we are old, so.
Yeah, that's true. They don't remember us anymore. But also, I have kids in the school system, as I know a lot of folks do. And then I also work in the school system as a counselor. And then my husband also is in the school system. So, like, I am kind of thoroughly entrenched in this. And there are a lot of different issues that come up for me, both on a broader scale, like what Greg was talking about. The things that my husband and I talk about at home are, how is the state treating teachers? Well, they're not treating the teachers very well. Do they really want people who have worked in this field as long as we have to continue to teach? Because it seems like there's a lot of things they're doing to intentionally move some of the older people out. So those are the, you know, conversations that are going on there. To Daryl's point, he's absolutely right. We have some major equity issues. Our kids, we have kids that are not being successful, and we are trying lots of different things, and they're not working. So there's also, you know, a concern as a counselor and as somebody who's in society, we can't function this way. It's not, we don't have a sustainable program to build a healthy society when we need to figure this out. So there's that. And then what I see in my role as a counselor, and something I think we're going to talk about, which is the intensity and the rigor that these kids are being pushed through, and this is a national phenomenon. You know, how many APs are you going to load on a kid? What are we talking about with college? We have a new 10-point scale coming out that has very little differentiation in it. And what is that going to look like? Is that going to alleviate things? Is it going to make it? You know, there's all kinds of things associated with that, too. So there are a lot of irons in the fire, so to speak.
Well, I'd like for all of us to turn to the challenge that Daryl raised, Daryl Allison raised earlier in his introductory remarks. One of the things I think that has been a challenge in the Chapel Hill Carborough and the Orange County schools has been to increase the, I don't want to say increasing test scores is a goal, but to increase the success rate for minority kids, and everybody, there's no disagreement that that is towards the top of our list. The challenge comes, I think Daryl raises a question as to whether or not more choice and public support for charter schools and for tuition vouchers and other support that would enable disadvantaged families to choose another option for their public for their education is a matter of great debate. Just so you all know, that I got knocked off my feet when Harold Fuller, who I knew as a community organizer of the most radical persuasion during the 70s, came back this year to promote a school choice and subsidies for private schools, and he, because of his credibility and background working in the public sphere, raised that question in a particular way. And I wonder, I don't know what, James Barrett, could you, or you, do you all wrestle with this, or do you feel obligated to say we're in charge of public schools and we have to really work for support for public schools, and this is something that other people have to decide? How do you address that issue?
Well, working on the board, our mission clearly is to make the Chapel Hill Carborough City Schools as best that they can be for all students. And clearly, there are groups that are doing better than others, and there are groups that we're not doing as well as we ought to be doing. We recognize that. We are trying to do things differently. I am very thankful that we have administration that is very supportive of doing new and different things to support that, and that's what we struggle with every day. At a broader level, my concern as a community member, like Kristen mentioned, is I see a lot of the movement that's going on as quote unquote a solution to the issues you're saying, and a lot of the things that Daryl brings up that are sound good theoretically, in reality, when they're being put into practice, they're being used to do things like resegregate our schools in the state overall, and that to me is not the right solution. That's not really benefiting every student, and it's not good for our society. So while we focus locally, we also have concerns and use our voice as much as possible to advocate across the state.
Let me just push you a little bit. If we're doing all we can in the public schools to close the achievement gap, and it's we haven't been able to do it, isn't there a room to examine other alternatives?
As Daryl even acknowledged, right, the majority of the students are still going to be in the traditional district schools, and so we've got to make those schools better, right? We can't we can't say the solution is to do it. And there are certainly examples, and we personally, I've been to the KIPP school in Gaston, for example, where they are doing incredible things with a very, very challenging population. And I've been there with administrators from Chapel Hill Carrboro that I've encouraged to bring some of those ideas back. It's one of the things that I think, Greg, you even looked at, right? How do we legislatively make those ties stronger and use those ideas within the traditional district schools? I think that's a good use of charter schools, is to be a laboratory for some of those ideas.
Well, I want to get to Greg in a minute to talk about the conversation in Raleigh and what the options are and what the likely outcomes are. But Daryl Allison, you've already, for those who joined us late, he's already introduced us to another perspective. He's the president of the North Carolina Parents for Educational Freedom. What's your pitch in response to James's statement that basically, as a school board member, he's got to work to, and that we've all got to work to make our public schools do a better job?
And I think that's the rub. So, and again, we just have to elevate the conversation. First of all, Dr. Alford is a mentor of mine, and so it's a pleasure.
So that's where these ideas come from.
He's a mentor of mine. You also influenced me as well over the years. And I appreciate the position that James have as a school board, but that often is the problem. We're going to kind of come from a situation that we kind of defend our turf. Who wants to say, as a school board member, we're not at 100%? Yet the very school that James visited, KIPP Gaston, has 100% graduation. And we're talking about rural counties. I mean, they get kids from 10 counties. Many of these counties are in the famous, infamous Leandro case, right, that we have a lawsuit saying you can't educate these rural poor kids, but yet we have a charter school. In Gaston County, that's doing it. The conversation has to shift to this, DJ, and this is where our listeners and we around this table have to be brutally honest. If we're not 100%, it's not good enough, right? We have to say 90% margin is not good enough if we're truly focused to make sure that every single child gets the constitutional right in terms of good, adequate education. And this is how we change this discussion, because if we all be honest around this table, we all be honest. The conversation has to shift from what are we going to do with those children to what are we going to do as if those children was my child. Mm-hmm. Because if we had the resources personally, mm-hmm. if there was a public charter school down the street, and we knew that our child, regardless if I'm on the school board or not, if that school is going to work for my child, I'm going to use by any means necessary, if I can kind of refer to Dr. Fuller a little bit, to utilize to make sure that my child gets the education that they're entitled to. So for that parent, they're not against the public school system. For that parent, they don't hate the public school system. They just want a school that's going to work for their child. And I think we as leaders, we as adults, have to elevate the discussion. Let's get away from the 70s, 80s, the rhetorical, you hate public school, you're just for vouchers. There is not one solution. I want to make sure we're very clear. My child is in public school. So there's, and in fact, I removed her from a public charter school to a traditional school, just so we're very clear. So there's not one solution that's going to eradicate the problems that we have, but we have solutions that are working. And so why don't we put a little bit more emphasis? Why don't we, for those 10 to 15 to 16 to 20 to 30% of kids that we know, if you hear from Kristen, that regardless of what we do, we're quite not reaching them, why not give them the option? We're not saying go there. We're saying here's an option. Perhaps this might be.
Let's do. We hear you.
Yeah.
And Dr. Fuller did a good job inspiring you. Before we go to Craig to find out what's going on in Raleigh, Kristen, Daryl mentioned you and your experience and your worry about on the line. What would you say to our school board about the need for options, or would you urge that we work within the current public school system
to
address these problems?
So I have actually lots of thoughts on this. So I'm just personally the kind of person where you throw spaghetti on the wall and you see what sticks. And I'm not opposed to trying a charter option. The issue I have is that I'm in the trenches, and I'm working with the kids in the trenches every day. And I look at what a charter school is going to require of them, which is for them to have their own transportation, for them to have their own lunches made. And I'm looking at the fact that even with public transportation, with our most at-risk population, it's a challenge anyway. And so, like, I played with this in my mind, because what we're doing is not working, and we're losing a bunch of people. Like, this is just not acceptable on a human level to have this kind of sieve with, you know, people flying through it. So it's something that does keep me up at night. So I don't know the answer. To Daryl's point, you know, why not see what works? To James's point, you know, we're trying things. The school system can also try new things. I don't know what the, good Lord, I don't know what they would be. We've tried, you know, so many things. I don't know what the answer is. I really don't. It's a conundrum.
Well, thanks to all y'all for setting it up. And now we'll just go to Raleigh to find
yeah,
out.
Yeah, we'll find out what Greg's doing, because he'll have it all figured
all
out
solutions.
Over there.
In the middle, without, first, talk about the political realities, the complexion of the your colleagues in the General Assembly probably is not in line with what the majority in Chapel Hill would be. But this matter is being discussed over there pretty much as we've been discussing it here. Where's it going?
Well, one political reality is that charter schools are not going away. You know, that we're how long, Dale? 20 years into the charter school era?
1996.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, there certainly are people who are friends of mine who want me to go to Raleigh and just abolish charter schools. That's not going to happen. I don't have the power to make it happen, and I don't necessarily believe it should happen. I think we need the strongest public schools, the strongest public charter schools, and the strongest private schools that we can have for the good of all children in the state of North Carolina. There's a lot of common ground around this table and in North Carolina, shared beliefs that we need to help every child be successful, that we need a strong public school system, things that have already been said. Here's where the rub is. Does the choice movement create a situation where it's difficult to sustain strong public schooling? That's the rub. And there are people who feel different sides of that issue.
Yeah.
So I think we do have to get past the rhetoric, as Daryl said, of that people who are advocates for charter schools hate the public school system. But, you know, then the question of, does this parent hate the public school system? Probably not. We hope not. But when you look at school districts where you're getting rapid resegregation, I think we do have to ask the question of, do parents fear the public school system? And why? And what does that mean? And furthermore, the question of, once a school system has a large number of parents who pull out of the public schools, is there a tipping point at which parents start to pull away financial support from the public school system? And I think in Durham County and Mecklenburg County, there are people who are worried that with the large number of charters that have been issued and the percentage of kids who are going to charter schools, and specifically the percentage of white
right.
and better off kids who are going to charter
right.
schools, is that going to get to a tipping point where there's a divestiture in public schools? And if you want a reference point for that, you look at school systems in the Rust Belt that resegregated as white flight happened, and then once the resegregation happened, the white flight had gone out in the 70s and 80s, the economic support for those school systems fell apart, and in Cleveland and Detroit and Milwaukee, you still today see some of the worst school systems
yeah.
in the country.
It's terrible.
So I don't believe that we're on the precipice of that, but that's the fear that's
there. A risk
there.
That you, the more maybe more controversial and possibly more likely in the General Assembly this year would be support for the voucher idea, that move away from charter schools, but that there would be vouchers for certain families to be able to send their children to private schools. And Daryl raised the hard question of, what would you, if if you could, what would you do for your child if the public schools weren't up to snuff? What are the political, are there going to be some things done in the legislature this year to change the way that we've been used to doing things?
There will be an effort to add money into the state's voucher school program, or not voucher school, but voucher program, student voucher, scholarship program. The big question on vouchers is what happens with the Supreme Court case that's still pending. But assuming that the Supreme Court upholds the program, there will certainly be an attempt to expand
it. Is it a partisan political issue, and is there
a
deep divide, all Republicans for it and almost all Democrats against it?
I mean, I would say that it's pretty easy to characterize that way. It's not all that way. There certainly have been Democrats that have spoken out in favor of vouchers, and there certainly are Republicans who are opposed.
Can you get a voucher if you're a homeschooler? Sorry.
Go ahead. No, jump.
Yeah. No, I'm just curious because we do have kids coming in from homeschooling all the time. So I'm wondering if you apply as a homeschool, if you can then get that voucher money.
If you're a homeschooler now, can you apply the voucher money towards your homeschooling mm-hmm. education?
Yeah.
No. That's not allowable.
Okay. I would hope not, but I can see where that would make.
What would be allowable now, we do have two virtual charter schools that have been set up, and children who had
starting
been homeschooled starting
in
the fall, they could enroll in those virtual charters and receive their free public education, okay. which everyone's entitled to.
Right. They have to pay charter. For those classes
including
now.
One charter.
This is James Barrett. I'm glad you jumped in representing or a member of the Chapel Hill Carborough school board. And James, I'm going to ask you to hold up.
Just
go.
I just want to say that one of those virtual charter schools does not have its courses recognized by the NCAA. So the thing that the institution that we know is such a bastion of academics doesn't believe the quality in that charter is good enough.
We'll continue this discussion after our break, and we'll also move to some other topics. But this is, I want to thank our panelists. This has just been a great education for me. If you joined us late, our panelists are Parents for Education Freedom in North Carolina, Daryl Allison, Chapel Hill Carborough Board of Education member James Barrett, East Chapel Hill School Counselor Christian Hemstra, and State Representative Greg Meyer. I'm D.G. Martin, and we'll be right back.
WCHL thanks the Town of Chapel Hill's Economic Development Office for presenting our 2015 Community Forum. The Economic Development Office works to attract and retain businesses and jobs in locations convenient to transit and housing, all in an effort to build a sustainable economy in which to live, work, and play. Chapel Hill is open for business, open to business every day of the year. Follow them on Twitter at CHEconDev. That's CHEconDev. Economic Development in Chapel Hill, right on the edge of the Triangle.
I'm Zoe Foote, a member of the North Carolina Youth Tap Ensemble. Our talented company of incredible dancers performs throughout the world. Come see our great show on Saturday, April 25th at 7:30 p.m. or Sunday, April 26th at 3:30 p.m. at the Carolina Theater of Durham. If you like dance, rhythm, or live jazz, this is a performance not to miss. For ticket information, Google NC Youth Tap Ensemble. Thanks, WCHL, for caring about the community.
Hello, this is Sharon Hill, president of Sharon Hill International. Join me this Saturday and Sunday at 11:30 a.m. and 6:30 p.m. for today's business with my guests, Dr. Bigby and Dr. Garibrandt, co-owners of Ignite Wellness Chiropractic Center. Join us as we discuss how you or your children could be damaging your health by being glued to technology. That's Saturday and Sunday at 11:30 a.m. and 6:30 p.m. right here on 97.9 FM, 1360 AM, WCHL, your news, talk, and Tar Heel station.
Welcome back to the 2015 WCHL Community Forum presented by the Town of Chapel Hill Economic Development. Thanks to our sponsors, Orange County Government, Coleman, Huntoon & Brown, the Chapel Hill Carborough Chamber of Commerce, Jersey Mike's, and Durham Technical Community College. Once again, here's D.G. Martin.
Well, our topic this hour is K-12 education, and I'm joined by a wonderful group of panelists, Daryl Allison, James Barrett, Kristen Hemstra, and Greg Meyer. We're going to turn now to some other issues, but first, James Barrett said, before we leave this topic, I want to make one reaction. We talked about the partisan division in terms of support for the school voucher issue.
Yeah, and Darrell Allison with Parents for Education and Freedom in North Carolina. You know, I get Raleigh. I get how easy it is when we start talking about education. I think we as citizens, we give up too much. We quickly point to Raleigh and Republicans and Democrats not getting along, and everything's partisan, where mamas and papas at the kitchen table don't give a rat's flip if it's Republican, Democrat. They just want something that works for them. And so it is very important for us to note, you know, that the Opportunity Scholarship Program is designed for low-income children that's in public schools that are not doing well. We're talking about 100% of the federal poverty level. So Family Four today is about $44,000 for Family Four, and it goes up to a little less than $57,000 for Family Four. And the critical point is this. When you look at the subscription for the program, and this is the little-known fact, we had over 5,000 applications, online applications that came in from 97 counties across the state of North Carolina for low-income families.
Well, you remember your mentor and somebody I admire, Howard Fuller, also advocates for these type programs for low-income and low-achieving students. But he admits that he's gotten schnookered by the partisan rhetoric of those who wish to extend that program beyond low-income and low-achieving students to the wealthy people that some that they represent. Would you, like him, lie down in front of that effort?
Absolutely. We don't need it. Again, you cannot say that we're meeting a need. Again, the program design is not for every child. Again, when you look at the 70% or so, 75% of families that are doing well, the kids are doing well in traditional public school, let's put the resources there to continue to help them to continue.
Well, I love this argument, or this discussion. We've got to move to other issues. Absolutely. And I want to ask our representative, Greg Meyer, to talk about the other education issues that are facing the General Assembly, both first, perhaps funding, whether or not there's a chance for a little bit better funding this year on a nonpartisan or a united effort, and also any of the other issues relating to public education that you see might be coming up and require a knowledgeable public here in Chapel Hill.
Sure. I think the funding question remains to be seen. Everyone's waiting to see what the April tax receipts look like.
Yeah, that makes sense.
How much money are we actually having come in? It looked like we might have a shortfall. Now some people are thinking we might actually have a surplus. Who knows? And the Republicans control all of the budget writing pens, and I'm not in those conversations. I don't know. I do believe there is bipartisan interest in increasing some investments in public education, including teacher salaries and including providing more money to school districts for things like textbooks, driver's education, digital education that have been underfunded over the last few years. I am a little worried about potential strategy for some of that funding. I think there's going to be a pot of money that's given to schools to say it's going to be flex money, so that it makes it more difficult to say that certain things weren't funded, because if you say, well, you didn't fund driver's education, they'll say, sure we did. We gave you this pot of money. You could use it for whatever you want. And that's a smart political strategy by those people who are writing the budget. But I'm not sure that the amount of money will fully meet the needs of what local school districts have expressed. I think beyond the budget, there are a whole bunch of great education issues where there's amazing bipartisan work happening. Four bills have passed House Education today around creating a talent pipeline for teachers and administrators. Have had Democrats and Republicans working on them collaboratively, co-sponsoring them, receive support of both parties today. I also think that there's a lot of interest in really trying to figure out what are we doing about the state's testing system. Representatives from both parties have heard from parents and teachers that there's too much testing. Everybody's tired of standardized tests dictating the way a child's education is delivered. And we're starting to think about, given the new technologies that are available to us and a better understanding of how to do good assessments, what should testing look like? What are we going to be moving towards, and what types of tests are we using now that we can do away with so that we can focus on instruction and less on assessment?
James Barrett, I'd like for you to put yourself in the role as representative of the school board and to tell Craig Meyer what our school board would like for the General Assembly to be doing or not doing as far as our schools here in Chapel Hill Carver are concerned?
So I think there's a couple things that Greg touched on. I mean, one is the flexibility, while as a political strategy I may not like, is what school districts would like to have more of. There's been an awful lot recently, some, you know, inside baseball kind of stuff that still caused us headaches because we can't move money around as much as we used to. And so we would love to see that flexibility in money. And then the overall funding is just abysmal, right? We talk sometimes about the teacher pay issue,
right?
And that's significant, but that's only one measure. The
right.
actual overall per pupil funding in the state of North Carolina is 48th in the nation. That is just, it's obscene. And that to me is, I mean, it'd be great to get a little more money for this, a little more money for that, but the last several years, that percentage has fallen from where we used to be, and it is just, it's having a real impact. Not as much in Chapel Hill, in Carrboro, right? We have wonderful support from our county commissioners and our community in what we pay in property taxes, but in the other places that don't have the resources we have here, they feel it every single day, and that is it's the responsibility of the legislature to fix that.
Let me ask you to follow up. Are there any things in the way of curriculum direction or the outside the budget process that the General Assembly either has done that you'd like to have undone or is considering that you would like for them to take a either a pro or a
There are 100 things. I mean, there's the school calendar law, right? I mean, this is nobody liked going to school on Saturday twice this year in Chapel Hill and Carrboro. Nobody likes going to school on Memorial Day coming up next month. And then the other one that's going on right now is Common Core, and we have been strong supporters in Chapel Hill Carver schools of what Common Core is helping our students learn more by making them think deeper and helping our teachers in having a clearer set of standards that they have to teach to. And it is going back to the North Carolina standards that existed before Common Core, which were clearly ranked towards the bottom in terms of the rigor of those standards. That's what people want to go back to, but it's really wrong for our students. And not just in Chapel Hill, but across the state.
In terms of the Common Core, which I think there's support for in the Chapel Hill, Carver, and the Orange County systems, but not in Raleigh, are there things that you can ask Craig to do that would give you the opportunity to develop your curriculum consistent with Common Core, even if the state moves away from it?
I would be most happy if they would, do the political trick of renaming Common Core to something else, but leaving the standards as they are. Because North Carolina does have a strong tradition of having statewide standards, and that's an okay thing. I don't have any problem with. There's no reason that we should have the work that has. There's real work that has to happen to develop standards and to develop assessments against those standards. And duplicating that in 115 LEAs is not productive. So centralizing that at the state level is okay with me, but it's got to be rigorous and it's got to be a good set of standards, not just what the Tea Party crazies ask for.
Kristen, you have you've been willing to chime in on these issues, and you have a special perspective in terms of dealing with students who are challenged by these decisions that are made both at the state level and at the school board level.
And it's interesting. First of all, I want to comment on what James said, and that's what a lot of states have taken the Common Core, called it their own standards. Georgia's done that, Florida's done that, and they've just they've kept the Common Core because it is a solid curriculum. So I do want to.
It's not a curriculum.
Sorry. Solid.
What is it?
Thing. A solid set of standards.
Yeah, mm-hmm. A solid set of standards. Where I see the difference is with the level of testing and the amount of testing we're doing. And we have an assessment for everything. Our teachers are constantly assessed. Our students are constantly assessed. And sometimes the assessments tell you you're going backwards. Sometimes they tell you you're going forwards. But there's a layer of stress that's unnecessary for everybody involved, for the teachers, for the parents, for the students. parents. And this, to me, is not what true education's about. You do have to have benchmarks. Like, I understand. I want to know at the end of the year my child's actually learned something. And I do understand that. But with the standards the way they are now, like in our school system, for example, we have cut off the opportunity for some kids to go into a math class because of the standard that has been set on an EOC score that they take early on in fourth grade.
Yes.
It limits when they can hit algebra, which then limits a lot of things for them. And that's not a good use of standards, but yet you need to have a benchmark. We see a lot of students' stress level is incredibly high. We have students falling apart, literally, around testing time. And there's just some things that we need to pull back on a state and say, what is the point of this? Like, what are we really trying to accomplish here? So I would like to see some of the testing pull back for sure.
James Barrett's reacting to this, and he's our representative from the school board.
One more thing that we'd like from the state, and it's something that our students have asked for, and particularly around this point about stress, is elimination of class rank on the transcripts.
Amen!
But that is creating a culture in our Chapel Hill Carborough City Schools of kids competing for the hardest courses possible, not because they're interested in the topic, not because that's what they want to learn, but solely to get the additional quality points that allows them to get a higher rank. If I take an AP course and you only take an honors course, and that is, it's not healthy. It's literally not healthy for students, the amount of stress they're having to go through for that.
Now, Christian,
and that's dictated by the General Assembly. That's a law that we need to get changed.
And thank you. And to that point, one of the sneaky things that the state legislature did is they put in that some of the Project Lead the Way classes also have additional weighting, which they're trying to increase the STEM classes. And it's been, the kids are naturally interested in this. But now if you take a particular class, you get the same weighting as an AP class. So they're trying to drive, they're manipulating kids' course choices this way. And you're creating an environment. I wish people could sit in my office and hear how many tearful conversations I have with a student today who is taking 6 APs her junior year, and she's wondering if that's enough. It's like, you know, she's already dying. She's not dying, but she hasn't seen her mom her sophomore year because she's working so hard, and then you're going to put this out on her. And the high school experience is not just academic. It's not. This is a time when young people grow, discover who they are, and they have a lot of life experiences that we're robbing from them because their nose is in a book, learning about things that they're going to be tested on. This is not what we want our society to be. I'm sorry, but we're raising our future, and this is not really not what I think we want.
Well, before we get Greg to respond to all of this, I want to turn to Daryl Allison. I guess not necessarily as the North Carolina president for the Parents for Education Freedom, but as a parent, are you experiencing some of these worries about the public schools that you'd like to share with your representative as a parent?
Yeah, you know, listen, it's very interesting hearing the back and forth here. And as an organization as well as a parent, I mean, the thing I think, and again, we're in a wonderful time. It's a challenging time because, let's just face it, it is really going to be a kind of a revolutionary, whether we accept it or not, we're going to have to look at things differently and do things differently. And one of the things that when you have the bone of contention oftentimes with the school board, with public charter schools coming in, things of that nature, what they really envy is the flexibility. They really envy the fact that this public charter school only has one board, ultimately, that they have to adhere to, and that's the state school board. And so I kind of like the idea, because you hear the tension point. You know, what works for Chapel Hill Carborough may not work for Durham. You know, so what about this idea of really customizing and being able to have the flexibility to customize so that we can be able to reach the child that we intend to have. Second thing is, like to say, as a parent, I'm a product of North Carolina Central undergrad and the law school at lower degree at Chapel Hill. My wife went to Chapel Hill. Listen, we just got grades back from my daughter. She's in public school. And I have to be honest with you, it's front and back, great. I mean, she did pretty well, I think. But I have to tell you, Even I'm scratching my head, and my wife and I were scratching our heads. Like, all right, now, to your point, Kristen, what does this mean? I know we're here to fight a Common Core, this, you know, no more Common Core. You know, what does this mean? Where are we going? What you know, how does this sync up? And ultimately for me, I think for many of our families, right, the proof is in the pudding when they're going off to college. And we all know the challenge that we're having for those children that finish K-12 and are entering the university system, you know, where a little bit more than half are about having to take some remedial courses at some level. So we really, it's challenging. I think it's healthy, these discussions. You know, and DG, I really appreciate the opportunity. But again, it's across the board. It's very comprehensive. There's no one solution. But I really do want to see more flexibility at the school board level so that they'll be empowered to have a more custom education that they can provide families and children, regardless of where they are in the progression.
Greg, you've heard these comments and worries, and now we've sent you to Raleigh, and you come back and hold you responsible for all of this.
DG, this is easy. I'm very pleased to tell James and Kristen and the Chapel Hill community that Representative Insko and I have introduced a bill that would allow the Chapel Hill Carborough City Schools to be exempted from the class rank requirement.
Yes.
So all we got to do is get the bill passed.
Well, what are the chances?
I'm not sure. It's a local
is
bill.
It's a local bill, but I mean, is Chapel Hill Carborough in Orange County, or is this special so that you can't expect to pick up nonpartisan and statewide support for this kind of idea about class rank, or is this just something that, because of the high achieving, high level, high competitive nature and high ability to game the system that our high school students particularly have, that this is a special problem for us, or is this something that you sense that is a statewide problem?
I don't know. We haven't tested the waters in the General Assembly yet. I've been working with the school system to prepare some materials that we can share with my colleagues so that they can think about this issue if they haven't thought about it before, because I think many of them probably haven't. But I think that there are parents all over the state who are frustrated with the way that stressors increase as kids move towards graduation, and the pressure to increase your GPA by taking more advanced classes and maybe not taking a class that you would actually enjoy more. And there's certainly lots of concern around the state about the pressure for everyone to be on a college preparatory curriculum, where some kids may do better on a career trajectory. And by better, I mean both more successful in school and more successful in the rest of their life. So that's a broader conversation about what do we really want our schools to be doing to prepare kids for life, and how do we make sure that kids and families have the opportunity to make good choices that fit their individual needs, personalities, and future life direction.
We've heard some other suggestions and worries. You mentioned earlier that there might be some bipartisan movement with respect to the amount of testing. Can you give some further encouragement for us for what might come out of the General Assembly on that, in that arena?
Well, so one thing that is important to understand is that it's difficult to decrease the requirement for testing every student in grades 3 through 12 on end of grade and end of course tests, because that requirement is really a federal requirement.
Mm-hmm.
There are other requirements that come from the state or the district or even the school, and I think people are very interested in looking at all of those. The bigger question is, what do we really want to know about assessment, and what's the best way to get it? So for instance, everyone now knows about big data and the way that Facebook can mine all this information out of your phone and find out all this stuff about you. Well, does that also mean that it's possible to have students turn in items in a reading or in a writing portfolio and then have a computer that actually tracks the development of their writing over the course of their time in school and tell us whether they're on trajectory to be able to write a college level essay when they graduate or not, without ever having to have them sit down and take a timed exam in a standardized format, but just the stuff that they're doing? Can we just track it? Or could we move to a sampling situation where we don't have to test every student every year, but we just, you know, every couple years kids get tested, or some of the kids get tested, not all of them, enough to know whether a school is doing its job or not. So there's other possibilities that people are at least curious about and trying to figure out, how could we try these things?
Well, is that something that requires legislative action for school boards and schools to experiment with?
Some of it probably does, and there are things that local schools and boards could do on their own.
And is there any developing in specific ideas in the way of legislation proposed this session that might lead us into the
future?
Into the good things that you say might be possible.
There are two pieces of legislation that I've supported that I think are better. One is there's a piece that I think has already passed the House that would have the Department of Public Instruction actually inform parents and teachers what kids got wrong when they take standardized tests. Right now, you take a test, all you get is a numeric score. You don't have any idea what you did well on or what you did poorly. And part of the reason why those tests have little credibility with parents and teachers is because they don't get any useful information. All the information goes up to tell us the aggregate of how does the school do, how does the district do. None of the information goes back down to the people who are actually the consumers of our educational system, kids, parents, and then the teachers, of course. So this would say that every year you'd get a report back for your child, and the teacher would get a report back for their students saying, these are the standards that you didn't meet. So you wouldn't know the test questions you got wrong in particular, but you would know which areas of the curriculum you weren't succeeding in. I think people would like that.
And we're actually doing that in
James Barrett from the school board.
In our middle schools and the performance series testing, which is partly why your report card is so confusing, because we are trying to provide more of that data back to parents. So you have to strike that balance between being too confusing in the report card as well as providing that feedback loop.
The school performance report cards?
No, the performance series testing that they do for measuring growth multiple times a year does provide some information about what standards specifically are being done well and what aren't. So.
But which report card is confusing? The...
It comes back to the parent in the student's report card.
Oh, just like, okay, gotcha. Sorry.
And there's a bunch of numbers on there, and people don't understand.
This has been an exchange between James Barrett and our representative, Greg Meyer. We're running close to out of time, and we've been guiding you about what we wanted our panelists to talk about. And before we stop, I'd like to go around for each of you to have a little bit more than a minute to talk about the things that are on your mind that we might not have asked you about, and Kristen is waving her hand, so floor is yours.
Well, what I was going to say in regard to the performance-based testing, very interesting. I had my first experience with it this year. One of the things, and I just want to share this story because I'm sure other parents will have this or may have had this. The performance came back for one of my children that she was, you know, she had lost like 125% or something. So this was concerning. Fortunately, I have access to some of the people who work for the school. So I took it to the specialist in this particular area and I said, please explain this to me. And she said, oh, that's really simple. The scope and sequence we teach is different than the one that's being assessed. Okay? She hadn't learned any of the stuff she was being tested on. They had learned other stuff she was supposed to, they had reversed the scope and sequence. So next performance testing, she's, you know, doing great, whatever. So for a parent, that's what I was talking about, some of the stress. So you're looking at this and you're going, wait a minute, we just lost, you know, a whole year's worth of ground. What's going on? But really you're gaining. So some of the things, I think we chase our tail sometimes trying to make sure that we're assessing and making sure growth is happening. And yet we haven't figured out all the kinks and what's going on.
Okay.
So that's just something for people to have an awareness of.
James Barrett, closing remarks.
Well, I think the one thing we didn't touch on that I know is a big topic in the General Assembly this year, particularly, is how to do differentiated pay. And so 75 districts across the state put in plans last year. Most of them said, we don't want to do this. That was their quote-unquote plan. But we do in Chapel Hill Carborough have a very specific plan that we hope gets some blessing from the state as a pilot for how to make sure that we pay teachers for the behaviors we want to see from them.
Well, we'll look forward to next year seeing how that works. Daryl, have you got a closing comment?
Yeah, I do. And this is pretty important to us. I think, for North Carolina, I think for our schools and kind of seeing how they are, I think too much is focused on proficiency scores. I like to see growth scores. Mm-hmm. I like to know where a kid comes in day one. And then where they are, and track it that way to get into that customization
of school
growth. Yeah.
Greg Meyer, we've worn you out, but have you got something that you'd like to report to us to think about that we haven't covered?
The one personal thing that I care about very much and working on is how do we address disproportionalities in suspensions and expulsions. We have too many students of color, students with disabilities, and poor students who are not spending time in school because the school has put them out of school. And sometimes there are legitimate behavioral reasons for that, and sometimes there are not. We need to get to the bottom of that. We need to start supporting school districts that are using positive approaches to keeping kids in school even when they have behavioral problems, and using diversions that keep those kids out of the criminal justice system.
Yep.
Well, I want to thank you guys. You've given us a great beginning introduction to the kinds of things that ought to be concerning all of us here in Chapel Hill, Carbor, and Orange County. You've been listening, those of you who are listening, to K-12 Education here on the 2015 WCHL Community Forum. I want to thank our panelists, first of all, Parents for Educational Freedom in North Carolina President Daryl Allison, Chapel Hill, Carbor Board of Education member James Barrett, East Chapel Hill High School School Counselor Kristen Hemstra, and State Representative Greg Meyer. And that'll wrap up our 2015 WCHL Community Forum. You can hear it every other hour on our website, and we'll be rebroadcasting it. So a special thanks to all of our panelists and to our great moderators, Jim Hefner, Kurt Ross, Aaron Keck, and Blake Hodge. Thanks to everyone at WCHL Chapel Hill Carbor and their team for hard work. I'm D.G. Martin. Thanks for listening.